podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. First one back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birds to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show, lead the pen. Get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Welcome back, podcast patrons. Another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. Episode 217 brings us Mr. Andrew Novak from the PGA Tour, fresh off a T8 at the Waste Management last week. Andrew, what's going on, bud?
How's it going? I'm glad to be on the podcast. Thanks for asking me on.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk a little bit of golf. You know, we'll talk a little bit of non-golf stuff, too. So last week, a big week for you, man, like legitimately an enormous big week, almost, you know, I don't want to say career changing, but definitely changes the direction of your year a little bit. Would you say?
Yeah. Especially in the sense that, I hadn't made a cut yet. I was still stuck on 0 points. I hadn't necessarily played bad, but, Sony, I didn't play well. And then the La Quinta tournament, I didn't really play well. And I always just like never score well there. That's just like a weird tournament. But Torrey, I thought I started playing like a lot better and definitely like I deserved like with my play to be playing the weekend. I ended up missing by one, but I played some good golf. So I knew I was trending the right direction. And then obviously having a great week was a nice way to kind of jump back to a good pace for the season.
Is there anything within your swing or your mindset where you just know like, oh man, that clicked. Like, I know I'm going to have a good week because it feels like this or I felt that. Is there any trigger like that that ever occurs to you?
Yeah. I mean, I know when I'm hitting it well, when I'm swinging well, but it's also still golf. So like, I knew I was hitting it well at Torrey and then it didn't really result in anything. You just have to be swinging well and then have things go your way that week as well. Unless you're, you know, a freak like Scotty and some of those guys that just do it every single week. But for me, I knew I was playing well, like short game was in a good spot and I was swinging really nice. So it basically was going to come down to making putts and I made a bunch of putts and also got gifted a super good wave. And a lot of things went my way and I, you know, took advantage of it and did my part, which was good, but. My game was definitely in a good spot. I felt it early week.
Most of the listeners probably know this already, but last week, you know, the rains there, the weather was almost a little bit unprecedented out in Phoenix. Yeah. You know, you guys had some cold temps, you had mud. Right. I mean, hell, the place looked like Woodstock half the week, mm-hmm. a ton of rain. How do you go by passing that time when it's just delay after delay after delay?
Yeah. I mean, it was tough. Like, it's literally rained every single event on tour this year. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. Hopefully, I get a dry week in Riv this week. I have no idea. Probably not, though, because it just rained. We've literally played two events in the desert so far, and it's rained at both of them. So, like, yeah, well, I don't even know at this point.
Riv got 10 inches last week almost.
Right. I know it poured last week. Yeah. So, I've been watching it. I'm actually a little surprised for her. It's kind of running out. Have a little bounce to it. But anyway, besides that, as far as like the weather, like during the week, like the first day it was so bad. Like I played one hole and it was like awful. So when they called us off the course, it was like, okay, glad I'm not playing in that. Cause that sucked. And then when we went back out, it was pretty nice. So then it's, you know, to flip the mindset, like it was kind of nice. Cause I'm going back out there like, man, I'm getting so lucky compared to this other way. Like the holes that I played, the 8 holes at the end of Thursday that I got to play were so much more scoreable than any of the rest of the golf played the rest of the day.
Sure.
And then I got to go out and play what I played 27 holes on Friday, and Friday was like beautiful weather. Like we even lucked out, like it was like a frost delay in the morning, but the worst part of the day, it was a beautiful day all day. Other than the morning, it was like 38 degrees. So I didn't even have to deal with that. Like I got gifted getting to wait through that and then play like the rest of the day when it was beautiful. And then Saturday morning sucked and the other wave had to come back out and play in that. So by the time I went Saturday, it actually got beautiful again. So I played in good weather those holes. Like, I really lucked out to like get to play at the right times where the weather wasn't too much of a factor. Now the waiting around, you know, I played two separate days where I played 27 plus holes, which is kind of weird to like have a week like that. But as far as that, like I knew going into both those days, it was going to be like that. So I was showing up early and ready for a long one.
You hear a lot of grumbling from some of the guys, you know, I mean, look, it's like you said, it's golf. Everyone knows that at times it can be unfair. Do you hear grumblings behind the scenes, you know, guys being like, man, I can't believe I got to go back out in this crap. And, you know, and you guys are getting gorgeous weather later on in the day.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably like between them. Yes. But like when they were going back out in the crap, it was all of them warming up together doing that. So there might have been. But for like, it's golf. Like you're going to get on good waves and you're going to get on bad waves.
Yeah.
And like guys know when they're, you know, catching a good one and when they're catching a bad one, like you're aware of it. But like, you know, it is what it is. Like, I'm not going to apologize for getting a good wave because I've been on the other side, like plenty of times too. Like that's how it is for everybody. Like you just play it how it is. And, if you catch a really bad one that week, if you could just make the cut and make something out of it, great. And then when you get a good one, like, take advantage and make the most of it.
I think it's been three times already this year where the tour has been at least lift clean in place for one round.
Yeah, at least three, I would say.
Which it's insane.
Yeah, but they've been like valid every time. It's just because the weather's been so crap. Like, it is funny. Like, I keep laughing about it. I'm like, we're just going to be playing winter rules till like March or something. The tour's going to make a local rule for us or something. But like, but all of them have been valid though. Like, I was getting mud balls all week. Tory was like soaked, like literally got historic rains on like Monday. Like, we couldn't even go out and play. It was a Wednesday start and the course was never even open on Monday. Like, you had two courses and these rookies are having to go try and figure out two courses on Tuesday. And that's the only day they had to like try and figure it out. And that was like a pro-am day. So like, it was so soaking wet. And it's been like, just all the courses have been like kind of a mess but like they've done a really good job prepping them, but it's just sloppy golf.
Yeah. There's only so much you can do as a superintendent when the weather just refuses to cooperate.
For sure.
So that was your first week at Waste Management ever, correct?
Correct.
All right. So, you know, as someone that's been, you know, a golf fan for an extremely long time, I've seen that tournament grow from kind of the party for Phoenix residents only. And it really was done to kind of celebrate Phoenix and the Thunderbirds and their charitable associations to kind of what it is nowadays. And after this last week, I'm not really sure what it actually is. What were kind of your overall thoughts out there playing that week?
Yeah, bottom line, I mean, it's a party. That's what it is, first and foremost. There's a golf course or a golf tournament attached to it, but it is a party. I enjoyed it because I'd never really played anything similar or like that before. Like, I've played like other events where fans are crazy. And I do enjoy playing events when the fans are rowdy like that, but I'd never seen anything like on that level like that. It was really cool. But yeah, it was wild. I think I kind of had a slight advantage being that it was my first one because I didn't know what it was going to be like. I had nothing to base it off of. So I basically was forcing myself to go into the mentality of like, whatever happens, like, that's what it is. You just got to be prepared for everything and just like accept it how it is, because you cannot fight the crowds. Like, literally, if you start yelling at somebody in the crowd, like, the whole crowd's gonna start booing you. It's like, that's just, it doesn't work. Like, you just got to take it and roll with it. Whatever happens, happens. And if somebody's like way out of line, then, you know, maybe some other fans will take care of it, but like, you cannot as the individual do it. So
was going to say, we saw that with, like, you know, ZJ and Billy, are, you know, completely always out. Yeah. Like, Billy's always out. You know, and that's fine. Like, he was right.
I'm sure both of those guys were justified. But, like, in that moment on the course, like, you can't really do it. And so I, like, obviously, like, Saturday was, you know, the crazy day. And I only played seven holes. But I saw, like, it was just wild. It was nuts. But I was like, okay, I guess this is just what Saturday is like. Yeah. And I just kept rolling with it. And then it wasn't until like afterwards I was talking to some people or whatever, and everybody's like, why was this, what happened this year? Like, why was it like this today? Like, oh my God, that was awful. And I was kind of like oblivious. Like, I didn't know. So I think it was like a slight advantage, the fact that it was my first one with it being like that crazy on Saturday.
what exactly do you hear inside the ropes, right? Because if I'm a fan and I'm outside, I kind of see everything. But after being to so many tour events in my life, one of the things that always amazes me, and a thing I love about PGA Tour events, is inside the ropes is always kind of this sanctuary. It's always quiet no matter what else is going on outside. But but at Phoenix, right, that's a little bit different. So, like, how much of that do you hear, even if it's an ambient noise in the background?
It's, well, 16's honestly, like, kind of nice because it is literally white noise. There's so much that, like, you don't really hear any of it because it all just flows together. Now, if they start chanting, like, obviously, if everybody's chanting the same thing, you'll understand. But if everybody's just making noise, whatever, you have no idea. But the rest of the course, like, all day, like, there's stuff going on. Like, I didn't catch all of it. But the players do hear a lot of it, especially, and the people don't realize, like, when you're up top, if you're in like a thing on third floor or something, your voice carries, like, that stuff carries big time. So I was hearing, you do hear quite a bit of what people are saying, especially when, you know, people are drunk and their volume levels go up a bit.
But
I know I didn't hear all of it because my wife was telling me some of the stuff she was hearing. And I, you know, I didn't hear all of that stuff either, though. So.
Yeah, I always wonder because everyone looks so serene inside. And obviously, you know, when you're locked in, you know, pros have this ability to just, okay, I can be BSing with you in 5 seconds. But then when it's time for me to lock in, like, you know, I'm there and I'm in that zone and then I hit the ball and then everything else, you know, kind of happens outside of it. I always wondered that, you know, how much you actually can hear outside. And I'm assuming, you know, like you said, at Phoenix, it has to be more so than most other tournaments. Yeah.
I heard quite a bit. I feel like it was a lot of the drunk dudes that were the loudest. You definitely were hearing some of their stuff. My wife was catching a lot of the drunk girls were saying. I guess that wasn't carrying as well. She was, you know, going around telling them all off or whatever. But yeah.
Now you're a big sports guy, so I would assume. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd assume that this tournament last week almost made it feel like any other sporting event that you go to.
Yeah, by my football player, I was, you know, messaging with him. I was like, this, I finally felt like I was playing a real sport this week. I grew up playing other sports. So this is kind of like, you know, when I was a kid, like in the driveway playing basketball, like you're dreaming of making a shot in front of fans. But, and we get that in golf. But this was like truly the week where it is like that. You can make a whole stadium go crazy, basically. Yeah. So,
because some events you might have literally 15 people following a group, you know, and half of them could be family members and whatnot.
That's, yeah. There'd be multiple tournaments I play this year with less than 15 people watching me.
So I got to ask, and then we'll get off waste management. But kind of give me your thoughts. What was it like playing in that final group there?
It was great. I played with both those guys before and they're great. Okay. It was a really good group. Like, it was a cool group to get for, you know, 20, well, I guess we played 36 holes, but the long day Sunday. We all were playing okay to decent on Saturday. Nothing great, like kind of like sloppy-ish starts. And like we had kind of moments, but we also like all did some decent things. So we were all kind of right there going into Sunday. And it was really cool to see Nick kind of get through the round the way he did because he really drove it like pretty terrible early Sunday, early fourth round. He was not hitting the driver well, and he kind of worked himself out of it and then was like hanging around. I remember looking at the scoreboard on 14 and thinking it was like over and Charlie was going to win. And Nick just kind of kept scrapping, made some big putts, had some really good approach shots, and big one on the last to get the playoff and go win it.
Yeah, I think when Charlie was up by 3 or 4 at one point, I think most people think, well, hell, you know, I mean, you know, a respected PGA pro that's been doing this for 20 plus years, you know, kind of finish it out. But yeah, his finish was unreal. Birdie in 18 and then just birdie in the playoff. It was just phenomenal. So I got to ask you this. T8 is phenomenal, but as a professional athlete, you probably have super high standards for yourself. Are you happy with that week? Is that a good week for you? Or, you know, how do you look at that?
It's a good week. I made some mistakes on the final round. Made some loose swings, made a few, not necessarily like mental errors, but just a couple of like management errors. things that I could have done better. I don't think early week my game was really, really good, and I was making enough putts and doing things well enough to win. I do not think that my game Sunday was good enough to win, regardless if I got rid of those management errors and whatnot. Charlie and Nick played too well. I don't think I would have caught them down with how I was playing, even if I eliminated that. I could have probably been top five instead of eighth, which is probably two shots, maybe difference.
I believe so.
It was a good week. It was a great experience. I can do better. And you know, that's why I go tee it up every week to see if I can do better. But no, it was really cool getting to see that. That's the second time now. So I played with Nick Sunday in Canada as well when he won.
Okay.
So it was cool getting to see him do that again. I mean, I've gotten kind of backseat to two winning Sundays now. So I'm seeing the blueprint.
Sure.
Make a lot of putts and be Nick Taylor. But it was a great week for me.
So off week for you now, you know, PGA Tour designated, elevated, whatever we're calling it nowadays, at RIV in LA. But what's an off week look like for you? Are we grinding on the range? Are we spending time with the wife at home? Like, how is that set up for you? And does it change based off your finish last week?
It'll change, maybe not necessarily based off the week that I'm coming off of, but maybe based off energy levels as well. And if I have 2 weeks versus 1 week, and then how far the travel's been, like there are definitely many factors. I think the fact that this was Valentine's also factors in a little bit. Probably spent a little more time with her this week. But definitely, like, I've been, you know, getting to the course each day, practicing, getting work in, playing some shots I know I'll need in Mexico.
Okay.
Definitely trying to work on the driver a little bit. It was very close in Scottsdale, and at times it was very good. But there are a couple things that I could clean up with the driver, I think, going forward, which will help.
Where's your home course on the off weeks?
Sea Island.
Oh, okay, very cool. I was just there last summer. Well, this summer that just passed. Very nice. Yeah, played some good golf down there with my two boys.
Awesome.
That's a great area of the country to be in. You had talked prior, you know, growing up playing a ton of different sports. What sports you play growing up?
I played them all. Basketball, I played the longest. My dad played basketball in college. My mom played soccer in college. So I played both those sports. I played football, baseball. Football is probably my favorite sport, but I don't have the pain tolerance or the athleticism to play that. So that didn't last very long. But I do love football. And then basketball, I was a pretty good shooter. Good passer. I knew the game well, but I am 6'2", which height's not too bad, but nowhere near the athleticism. Can't jump. I don't have the foot speed to stay in front of somebody on defense. So if I had stuck with basketball, maybe I could have played like smaller level, but like my ceiling was going to be very much capped on where I could have gone in that sport.
At what age did you know that it was going to be golf in your future as far as sports go?
I didn't know if sports was going to be my future. I love sports and I wanted it to be in sports. I didn't know if it was going to be in like some sort of broadcasting or coaching or something else, but I've made the like commitment to only focusing on golf basically when I was like 12 or 13 years old. I wasn't really good at golf then. Like, I mean, I couldn't break like 100, but that's when I was like, all right, I'm going to go all in on golf. This is something I enjoy, and I think this is something that I can get a lot better at if I work hard on.
So was it around high school age that it started to click?
Seventh grade is the age you could start trying out for the high school team in South Carolina. So seventh grade, I went out and tried out for the high school team, and I was terrible. I got cut. I couldn't break 50 for 9 holes, and so I got cut. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was super fun, like competing and doing that. Because before, like nobody in my family played golf. Like I had always just kind of hit some plastic balls around the house and didn't really know what I was doing with golf. But because I enjoyed that so much, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna work, get with a coach, and you know, practice, work hard, and see where I can go with this. So I did end up playing basketball for like one more year after that. But then the next year, I did drop basketball, and then I was all golf from there.
So no basketball in high school then?
No. Okay. So seventh grade was my last year of basketball. So I guess I think I did like the, so it's a spring sport in South Carolina. So I did like the tryouts in probably February.
Okay.
Seventh grade. So I played basketball that spring with my team. And then that summer, and well, that spring and summer is like really when I started grinding on golf. That summer specifically, I was playing a lot of golf. And then the fall, I actually got cut again my eighth grade year for the high school team. But I mean, I had gotten way better. It was actually probably a little surprising that he cut me, but, you know, whatever, that's a different story. But anyway, it was by then I like caught the bug. I was like all in pretty much, by eighth grade.
I mean, this has the makings of like a golf Michael Jordan story, you know, getting cut.
Yeah, it was great. I actually ended up going to a different high school and then whipped up on that other high school for a few years in high school, which was cool.
Now, I read that the high school you went to won a state championship, but I wasn't too sure on the years. Were you part of that team?
Yeah. So our team was nasty. I went to Academic Magnet. It's a nerd school, like bottom line, that's what it is. So we were the number one, when I was there, we were the number one high school in the country, like, wow. ranked by whatever. It's a nerd school, like straight up. It is, like geniuses everywhere. I went to school with so many smart people. It was a lot of fun. I loved it. But, we had obviously a good golf team because, you know, that's how it is when you get a bunch of kids like that. So, but it was a smaller school. So we were in like one single A. And okay. So my freshman year, we won. And then after that, we got bumped up to 2A, which, funny enough, in South Carolina, all the best teams were in 2A. Well, 4A had good teams as well, but 2A randomly was, like, really stacked just the way it worked out. So we finished, I think we had a couple seconds and, like, a third my final 3 years. But my first year, we won state so bad my first year. Let's see. So it was shortened because of rain to one round. It was literally a one round state championship, 18 wow. holes. We did not take my score and I made the all state team. The all state team went to the top 10.
Wow.
So we did not use my score. And I think I finished like ninth or eighth or something. We won by like 20 shots or something over the next best team. I mean, it was not even close.
I'm going to get back to that, but I don't know if you're watching. Tiger just shanked 18.
Tiger did just shank it.
I mean, like, you know, I'm not good at golf.
It happens.
Good Lord. Yeah. Yeah. How about it?
Yeah. He was kind of blocked by it. He was going for the big cut around the tree. And that's not good.
He's pissed. Look at his face.
Yeah. He's done it before, but it's been a long time.
It's funny because, and we'll get back to the high school thing. I got a few questions on that. You know, everyone thinks like you guys hit the ball square center of the club face, like a dime size spot every single time. And it's just not true, right? Like for you as well, it's gotta be about managing misses as well. Yeah. Like for amateurs, right?
Yeah. Especially my driver. I use the entire face of my driver, man. That thing. Thank God I got some, good forgiveness with that because it comes off everywhere with that. Irons are usually reasonably dialed in, but yeah, no, it's about missing it in the right spot, the right time, and then be able to, you know, recover from that for sure.
Yeah, you can see he was trying to cut that hard and it just hosel rocketed the heck out of it. So in South Carolina, so if you guys perform well, is that when they bump you up a level? Because no. Here, okay. Because here no, in PA,
they went through after my freshman year. It was just a state thing, and they added. I can't remember if they added a 5A or if, and okay. So they shuffled divisions that way,
yeah.
Or if they just changed the numbers a little bit of where the brackets were that dropped you into whatever you were, and so our school was just big enough to get bumped from single A to 2A.
For sure, yeah. Same thing here. They go by the number of boys and. In golf and okay. Pennsylvania, all they have is double A and triple A. We're in triple A. We're barely big enough to be in triple A. You know, I think the school that I coach at and that my son plays at, we're at like 1,200 kids at states. He was talking to kids at states and they're like, oh, dude, I got 6,000 kids in my school. And it just, It blows my mind we're in the same division. Yeah. But, you know, no. At the end, those are all the kids you're competing against anyway, you know?
Yeah. Well, we played all the 4A schools, so we didn't really go to many tournaments, but we would play matches, like nine-hole matches against all the teams in our area. All the teams in our area, like Charleston was a big area, were all 4A teams. So, like, all we would play is 4A teams, basically. There was, like, a couple private school league teams we would play as well, but all we were playing were, like, 4A teams, and then we'd go to states and play teams we had seen all year.
Sure.
Because they were all, you know, kind of around the rest of the state. But, I mean, we were probably... We might not have been the best team in our area, but the only team that was better than us probably was the other 2A school in my area, which was Bishop England. That was like our rival. And they were really, really good too. But like we would pretty much beat up on most of the 4A schools around us.
Any other kids from that era, like from those 2A teams that ended up making it further in golf? I mean, I'm assuming some collegiate players.
Yeah. So, well, on that Bishop England team was Jeremy Grab. He played at Wofford with me. Okay. Came in the same year as me, and he was a very, very good player for us. Like all 4 years, he was like one of our top players, for sure. And then, let's see. So Pendleton was really, really good. They had Carson Young, who's on PGA Tour now, and a kid named Austin Langdale, who also went to Clemson with Carson. So they had a really good team. And then we had Cody Prevost was on Pelion, and they had the state tournament at their place every year, and Cody was number one junior in the world, I think, at the time. It was crazy. Like, it was literally him or Jordan Spieth. It was like people would go back and forth on who was the best junior player in the world, like, because they would go back and forth winning each tournament basically. And then his brother was also on the team. His brother was very, very good player and a playing at South Carolina. There were a ton of like power five, like D1 golfers basically that end up playing at that level. South Carolina, just in general, when I was a junior, had really, really good golf coming out at the time. I don't know what it was, but I mean, we literally had a stretch where I think Matt Neesmith was number one in the world, and he was a South Carolina guy. And then Cody Prevost was number one in the world, and he was a South Carolina guy, like back-to-back classes. And then Carson Young was like number three or four in the world the next class. It was like three classes in a row. South Carolina had like a top three player in the world.
Wow. So walk me through then how you end up, you know, from Magnet High School over to Wofford. How does that relationship start and work?
Yeah. My recruiting was like, it was really weird. I just couldn't get anybody to recruit me. It's kind of because I got into it so late. Like ninth grade, I wasn't that great. And 10th grade, I finally got like a little bit better and put some decent scores up. But because I wasn't good in ninth grade, I didn't get in any of the good tournaments for my 10th grade year. So then by my junior year of high school, I was finally playing better. And my 10th grade year got me into some better tournaments, but not like the best of the best. And I played really well my junior year and like actually did some stuff, but I still wasn't in the top tournaments until my senior year because of how well I played in my junior year. But then by like my senior year, nobody was recruiting me because everybody already had their classes stacked up.
Sure.
And so, I mean, I think my senior year, I was ranked on both Golf Week and the AJGA rankings. I was top 50 in the world. I think the polar rankings, I was even top 40. I played well in some good tournaments. I was playing all these like top invitationals, top events. And I'm like playing with guys going to Texas and like A&M and Alabama. And I was like hanging with or beating them at times. And they're like asking me where I'm going. I'm like, I don't have an offer. Or I think maybe at that time I might have been committed to Wofford because they had offered me. But it was a really weird situation. I mean, I'm very glad I ended up at Wofford, but it was definitely kind of odd.
Does that put a little chip on your shoulder?
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, it's tough, like explaining to these guys that you're beating about what state and where your school is that you're going to, and it's just like wanting to like email the coach, hey, I just beat your guy by 8 shots. You want to like recruit me or no?
Yeah,
like it was pretty frustrating, but. I mean, I was really glad where I ended up. You know, I was like, I sent emails to all these places and they didn't want me. So like, if that's how it is, like, that's how it is, I'll go somewhere else and beat them from there. The nice thing with golf, like at least back then, you could play anywhere and it didn't really matter. Like I could get individual honors anywhere, make it to NCAAs and do that individually from any school. Now it's kind of changed now with PGA Tour U. Like,
yeah.
Unfortunately, like after my junior year, I would have pretty much had to transfer from Wofford and go to a bigger school if it was nowadays, because of the way PGA Tour University is. I just would have had to play a better schedule if I wanted to have a chance at getting like the status on PGA Tour or Korn Ferry Tour. But I mean, I love my time at Wofford.
Was your coach there all 4 years?
He was. He retired after I graduated. Like the year I graduated, he left. So he left with me, basically.
Gotcha. Very cool. Very cool. I want to talk some off the course stuff, you know, that goes on weekly on the PGA Tour. You know, with it kind of being this weird cyclical calendar that it's not an actual like year starting January 1st. It's really kind of your first year, quote unquote, you know, out on tour. How are you finding simple things like finding restaurants or Airbnbs and hotels and stuff like that, and the travel that goes along with it?
Travel's just travel. Like I did it on Korn Ferry Tour for a long time. So it is what it is. You know, you hop on a plane and wherever it lands, you know, it's all kind of the same thing. Going to different places definitely like changed that a bit, I guess. But, I don't know. I think like, so this is like my third year on tour. It's kind of like I'm getting comfortable. Like I know where stuff is. I show up to a tournament. I know where registration is because I've done it twice now.
Okay.
Some of the events, I'd Monday'd into some other events before too. So like Honda or former Honda tournament that's now the Cognizant, this will be my fourth one in a couple of weeks. So like I've definitely like seen some of them, and I'm definitely a little bit more comfortable now that I know these courses. I have a few years under my belt. Like I feel like my routine of the week has definitely become more set now that I kind of know what I'm doing when I get to each tournament.
So kind of walk us through like that weekly routine. So your next tournament's going to be Mexico?
Yes.
All right. So what does that look like? Are you leaving Sunday night guy to get there Monday? Yeah. Are you leaving Monday to get there, you know, for practice on Tuesday?
I'm leaving Monday. It will change a little bit week to week. Yeah. And it's been a little bit crazy this early stretch because we've played so many events where like there's a bunch of events early in the season where it's two or three courses. Yeah. So obviously I didn't play Pebble this year because it was elevated, but that one's another multiple. Like there's been multiple of those events this year. So Mexico is only one course, which is nice. I'm getting out there Monday. I've played there twice now, so this will be my third time. I know the course pretty well. It's only 1 hour time difference, so I'm not worried about getting out there early for that. So I might get out and putt some, see what the greens are at Monday when I get there. If I get there early enough, go register. And then Tuesday will either be 9 or 18, probably depending on what the weather's looking like and how I'm feeling. And possibly depending on if I'm in the pro-am or not on Wednesday. And then if I'm in the pro-am Wednesday, that'll be nine holes usually because they do the 9 and 9s now, which is pretty nice.
Yeah.
So then I'll do that and do more prep that day. And then it's kind of go time Thursday.
Do you and your wife have a favorite restaurant or a place that you kind of religiously eat at all the tour stops?
Not like a specific place week to week, but she does have a running, like a notes app thing basically on her phone where she's, you know, marking down places we go each at certain stops, places we liked. She'll get recommendations from other people. And there's definitely like a few places like going into a week, like we know we're definitely going to be going to this place for dinner one night or something like that because we've been there before. We really liked it. So there's definitely some of that.
What tournament's your favorite to go to based on kind of the area of the country or other things that might be going on outside of the ropes that week?
Well, all that's jumping in my head right now is a restaurant and that I'm super excited to get back to every year. It's at John Deere, a place called Duck City. It will be golfers in there all week long. It is so good. Obviously, it's weird. You know, we got the whole schedule. I'm talking about Moline. But that place is unbelievable. Food is so good.
What type of food is it?
It's like
everything
American food.
Yeah, Americana fare.
Usually
yeah.
I get like a steak or something. Nice. But they got like their pork chops insane. Like they got good chicken. They got their fries are insane. Like the place is so good. And it's just, it's literally golfers in there all week. The guy, head chef there is a big golfer and he loves us all coming in there and they do a great job. So like that is one spot where it's like every year we go there, like I know I'm going there for dinner at least once or twice. That's always a fun one to go to.
Yeah, so those little things you look forward to.
Exactly. And that's the kind of stuff, you know, we'll take note of and you know, every year when we're going back somewhere, that's like something like that is something we're gonna be going and doing.
If you've got a big collection of golfers out at that place, are people getting bothered when they're eating dinner or not so much?
Not really. Yeah. No. I mean, it literally, when we were there last year, I would say it's not a huge place. They have two kind of rooms. I bet there's like 30 tables in there. Close to half were either golfers or caddies or equipment people. Like it's literally everywhere. And I mean, if you go up to a guy and said something, like they'd probably be cool with taking like a quick picture or something. Like, but no, it's, I mean, everybody's just in there getting dinner, I guess. It's,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just the vibe of the place, I guess.
Who do you hang out with most on tour week to week? Like, who do you really vibe with out there?
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot of the Sea Island guys just cause we're always hanging at home. Hang with Ben Griffin a lot, play a lot at home with him. Play a lot with Will Gordon, Davis Thompson, just a lot of the St. Simons guys.
Nice, nice. Now you've got your own podcast. I know you're big into sports. I'm assuming sports betting as well, or just giving odds and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's. I'm not usually like gambling on sports. I don't know. I enjoy making my picks. I enjoy being right. In the competitive level of that, but actually putting the money on stuff like I don't know. Being right is plenty enough.
Sure.
It is what it is.
Well, I think you'd appreciate this. I got a buddy that retired from work. I'm a teacher. He retired. So he started doing DraftKings and he's like, you should put $100 in and, you know, we can bet on golf since you know a lot about golf. And I was like, okay, but he doesn't listen to me. So he's just tanking big time. But, gotcha. You know, my wife makes fun of me. I make these 10 cent, like 25 cent bets. To me, it's hilarious. I love it. I had put 25 cents on you to finish top 10 last week. And I made like $3.75. And to me, like that was winning like $100. Like it was the greatest thing ever, you know, and it gave me someone to root for.
Of course.
You
know,
it gives you a little bit more vested interest in the golf itself.
Yeah, and we were hearing plenty of that last week. Somebody in the crowd would be like, "I got $2 on you," and like
I was going to ask you that.
Well, this putts for about 1,000 times that right now. But okay, I'm trying my best. I promise I'm not missing these on purpose just to screw over your bets.
Do you get people weekly that are like, "Hey, Andrew, look, man, I put $5 on you to win, or I put $10 on you to finish, you know, top 20. Like, come on, man, do it for me."
Yeah, I'm like, I mean, I'd love to do it for you, but I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for me. But yes, absolutely. I hope I do well.
You know, so I know you're, you know, it's one of the things that you're kind of, you know, passionate about with the podcast. But I want to kind of get like your thoughts as a professional athlete. Like, do you enjoy that there's gambling, not only just on your sport, but on sports in general, and that it is so legalized and so big and that, you know, it's promoted out on the tour and the PGA Tour website gives odds for guys every week. Like, do you look at that? Are you cognizant of that stuff?
I'm not like looking at my odds every week to see where I'm at. But I do think it's a good thing because a lot of times people know my name or know of me because they've seen me on bet slips, because they bet on me to top 40 or make a cut. Or they've seen my name on stuff like that. Like a lot of times it can be good for that because, and it's hard for the tour to do it because there's so many of us, but like not everybody gets promoted, or shown a lot, by the tour. So it's just another way to kind of get my name out there. And, you know, maybe if I want a fan $5 because I finished top 40 at a tournament or something. Maybe, you know, they'll be a fan of mine and they'll show up at a tournament and they'll be like, hey, I know that guy. I like that guy. Like, I do think it's good. I think when they first started doing it, I think some people were worried that people would be out there like yelling and like trying to mess people up because they bet against them or something. Sure, I haven't really seen any of that. I haven't really seen like any negatives from stuff like that. So as far as for me, like, I think it's been cool because I do think that some people know my name a little bit better just because of that.
You know, that's I'll tell you what, I was completely blind to that. Like, that's a phenomenal point. You know, you expand your fan base and maybe someone that could pass you and not even realize it's you. But just based off name recognition, you're right. The tour's got so many people out there and there's only so many people they can show each week on TV. That is a great point right there. Do you ever worry that someone is going to go, you know, over the line? Like, to me, I think Phoenix got out of control because we're at the point of like social media where everyone's trying to outdo each other. You know, like who can act the fool the most?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen anything like that on the course? Do you ever worry about that on the course?
I mean, there was definitely some of what you just said there of people being like, it was a competition to see who could be the biggest idiot. I think there was definitely some of that. But no, I haven't really ever seen anybody actively. I've had people yell like, I bet on you. I did have a heckler at Phoenix. I will say on Saturday, I had a guy yelling at me on the range, telling me I was going to choke and do all this stuff. I don't know if he bet against me or not,
right.
But he showed back up on like the fifth hole and was yelling all this stuff and being obnoxious and telling me I sucked and stuff. But I think the cops took him out of there on that hole. So
okay,
I didn't see him after that. And I think we were walking to 6T and one of the cops came up to me. He was like, hey, sorry, we didn't get that guy out of here sooner. I was like, all right. But I didn't even realize. So when we were on the range, he was yelling. We were the last group, so it was me, Nick, and Scythe hitting on the range, and he was yelling. I didn't realize at the time it was the same guy. I didn't know until like later. Scythe told me, he was like, yeah, I don't know what you did to that guy, but he didn't like you. That was the same guy from the range. I was like, oh, I had no idea.
But, now, are you the type of guy that gets pissed at that, or you just laugh it off? I think if I was in your position, I'd laugh it off. I'm like, dude, yeah. I'm playing the PGA Tour. Like, obviously, I don't suck.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, like, he was like clearly very drunk. Like,
sure.
He was just yelling whatever. He was like showing me how I needed to like swing. Like, dude, you can't break 90. Like, chill. Like, I was kind of laughing at it. I was joking with my caddy. He was trying to like go over there and try and give him a glove and then just like not. Like, pretend like I was going to give it to him and then just like walk away. Like, see if he changed his tune. But, I mean, I was in the middle of, you know, doing my thing. So you kind of laugh at it and just move on. That was one of the ones where it got to the point where other fans were like, don't listen to that guy. That guy's an idiot or something.
Yeah. Like, whoa, hold up.
Last week it had to be like way out of line for somebody to be saying that for like the rest of the fans. Cause it was like, you know, constant stuff usually.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's something you're never going to forget, honestly.
No, definitely.
So talk to me about the podcast. Where's this idea come from? That, you know, a dude who's as busy as you, you know, has enough time to conceptualize and come through with the podcast. And I'm assuming it's with a buddy of yours.
Yeah. So a former teammate of mine. So he had the idea for the podcast. It was him and a friend of his were going to do it. And they had kind of everything set up. And I guess the other guy like pulled out on him or something. And so he was trying to figure out like, oh, crap, well, I want to do this podcast. I have all this like stuff ready, but I have nobody to do it with. And so he messaged me. He's like, hey, like, I know you watch a ton of football or whatever, you really enjoy it, would you be willing to fill in while I find a podcast host to do this with, basically? And I was like, sure, I'll do it if I'm the guy. So it just kind of happened like that. It's always something that I thought would be really fun to do. It really does not add a whole lot of extra effort on my part, because he's the one doing all the editing. Like, he puts a lot of time into it. He does editing and stuff. Yeah. But I was already watching the football. I have kind of the encyclopedic memory. I can think, like, I can be watching and then be like, oh man, that happened 2 years ago in this game, similar kind of thing. Like, my brain just kind of works like that. And so if I'm already watching the football and I already have these opinions and know the players, know the game, it wasn't super hard for me to just talk about it. I think the way we do the podcast is very easy. It's like kind of back and forth. We present, you know, topics and just give opinions on it and just kind of debate it out. It's, you know, we have fantasy sections, but I'm already playing fantasy football. I know what's going on. Like, I know who's playing well, who's not. And then the betting stuff is just, you know, based on what I think is going to happen from what I've seen from the teams and how I think games will go. So it's not a whole lot extra that I'm going out and having to research on top of what I'm already doing. And it's been super, super fun. You know, we just finished up our last one. We're going to have a little break now because there's just not going to be enough to talk about for a little stretch. But
sure,
it was really fun doing that this year with my co-host. And, you know, we don't have a huge following, but I think it's steadily grown a little bit each week. And I think it's been really cool to see that. And there was actually two different people out at Phoenix that were yelling Screenplay Pod at me, which was pretty cool to see.
That's I tell people all the time, like, I could care less how many followers I have or listeners. It's about those real interactions, you know, that like the people that DM me constantly or always looking out for you, you know, and different things out there. And for you with your buddy, it must be nothing more than just like, you know, kind of a phone call to talk about sports.
If we get no listeners for the rest of whatever, I won't care because it's been so fun to do. It's been a really fun, it was something that I kind of wanted to do and thought would be fun to do, but didn't really know how I would go about doing it or starting it. And the idea and everything was presented basically half done through him. And yeah, it's been great. It's been a lot of fun. A week before it happening, I didn't really ever expect it to like be a thing that was going to be happening. It just sort of kind of happened and came together. And I can't really explain it, but it's been like a really, really cool experience to be a part of. That's for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I'm a big football fan as well. And unfortunately I'm a Jets fan. Had season tickets. I grew up 5 minutes from their training facility at Hofstra back in the day. So let me ask you, as somebody that is not my, I'm assuming you're not a Jets fan.
No, I'm a Panthers fan. It's even worse.
Okay. Yeah, well, you don't have the history I have, but you know, the scars.
Buddy, we don't even have the first overall pick.
No, that's true. But you know what you do have, which I'll tell you what. So I'm an enormous Penn State fan, and you got Kerry Collins, the '96 draft, Kerry Collins. And I could not run out and buy a Panthers jersey quick enough. I had the home and the away because I was just
the
biggest Penn State fan in the world. And he was your first QB there.
Yeah, that was.
That's going back.
I was young. So we had, we had a nice little stretch. Him, we had Chris Winkie for a bit.
Yep, from Florida State.
Then we kind of bounced around. Finally, Jake DeLone brought us to what we thought was the promised land. Then Tom Brady said no. Bounced around. Rodney Pete, that was a great quarterback for us.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
So give me some thoughts. Give me some glimmer of hope, Andrew, for my Jets next year. Because I have none.
So here's your glimmer of hope. Bottom line, I think you're in a win-win because you are very much capped on what you can do. Either Aaron Rodgers comes back, things click, defense balls, Aaron Rodgers is like normal Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And y'all are good. You make the playoffs. You like might win some games. I don't think you're going to win a Super Bowl, but
no.
I don't know. Making the playoffs and winning some games is a Super Bowl for the Jets, right? So if that happens, great. And then you move forward from that. And you obviously then, you know, Robert Saleh has proved that he's a very decent and reasonable head coach to move forward with. He can field a good defense and you roll with that. I don't know where you go after Rodgers, but you figure that out later. If he shows that he can play well, maybe you can pull another free agent somewhere. I don't think he has many years left.
Go ahead.
If he sucks, if he gets hurt again, if the Jets suck,
he will.
You will blow it up. You will move off of Salah. I think Vrabel or Belichick, probably not Belichick, though, because I don't think he's going to end up in New York. But I think Vrabel is probably going to end up in one of the New York teams after. It might be the Giants. I completely could see the Giants flopping badly next year and then getting rid of Daboll. But I think that would be a great spot for him to land. And then you go from there, it'd be full rebuild and just chalk this up to, you know, failed attempt, whatever, and let Vrabel kind of build like some nice hard-nosed team and go from there. Because the nice thing about that is your clock is going to be really, really nicely placed, where if the Dolphins pay Tua 3 years down the road, they're going to be completely screwed by that contract. And the Bills are going to be kind of in a weird spot with Josh Allen getting older. All their players are kind of phased out. They're going to be like in a weird kind of middle ground. So I think you'll hit a nice little window there if you do have to, whatever, rebuild and take like 2 years. So obviously you'd have to, you know, hit your picks and do all that. But I think there is a window there for the Jets to kind of take over, like, what would that be, like 27, something like that, 2027, 2028, somewhere in there. So I do think you're kind of in a situation where, because of Aaron Rodgers, like, your clock is, you're not just going to get stuck in like limbo. It's either going to go well and you have that, or it's going to go really poorly, blow it up, rebuild, and then you have that window later on from that.
How can we get four new offensive linemen for under $20 million? Can we do that? If we can do that, we can contend somewhere.
How many picks do you have in like the top? First three rounds.
I believe it's four. Now they're looking at Ali Fashanu from Penn State, which I would love.
He's
anytime,
good.
Anytime the Jets draft a Penn State guy, like,
you're picking 10, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So you'll have him. I don't think the Notre Dame guy's falling that far. I think Tennessee's like pretty likely, or maybe the Giants, but you'd have him like a JC Latham, or there's one other guy that they're talking about in that range. So, yeah, I think you'll definitely have options at O-line there. Might even be able to trade down to, like, 14 range if somebody wants to move up for, like, a Penix. Like, if, say, the Vikings want to make a jump from wherever they're at to try and get Penix, maybe you could be a trade down and grab O-line there if there's, like, a few names that fall. I think there's some options. I don't know.
I want to tell you a story. You'll appreciate this as a football fan. So now I went to my first Jets game at 13 years old. It was a game that Dennis Byrd got injured in. He was paralyzed. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but this is going back. I'm 45, so this is going back a ways, okay? So 30-plus years as a Jets fan. Wife and I had season tickets. Grew up near Hofstra. Jets play the Indianapolis Colts and Peyton Manning in the AFC Championship. The night that they won to get into the AFC Championship, I told my wife, I said, I don't care what it costs, we are going. I may never see the Jets get this far again in my entire life. The Jets are up at halftime. Mark Sanchez and Braylon Edwards down my sideline in front of me. They score. Peyton Manning completely ruined my entire sports life. The next year, Andrew, the Jets are in the AFC Championship against the Pittsburgh Steelers in my home state of Pennsylvania, and they miss a field goal to make it to the Super Bowl. I do not believe, before I am dead and off this earth, that the New York Jets will ever pay me back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I know the struggle of.
And I was going to say, as a Panthers fan, you can understand this.
Football is a struggle. The Panthers have been very good at disappointing me. And in college, I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, and I'm just a little too young to, you know the good days, and so it's been 20 years of frustration and kind of underachieving.
Them in Penn State in 86, they walked off the plane in full camo fatigue, and that was one of the greatest Citrus Bowls ever.
I think the mafia paid off Vinny that game, unfortunately. But if we had NIL back then, Miami would have made sure that Vinny was good to go, and I don't think Miami loses that game because there's no way Vinny throws five picks. But
yeah, that's true.
Unfortunately, no NIL back then cost him a natty.
Yeah. Like I said, I want to be super respectful of your time. So let me get you out of here on this. What is the rest of the year? You know, we'll cycle back to golf. What's the rest of the year look like for you? And what are your goals out there now for the rest of this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be playing in pretty much everything I get in. The goal being to get into some of these signature events. They're, a big deal. Extra points and basically, extra money. They're top tier events. So kind of the goal for the guys that aren't in them is to get into those and play well and, make the playoffs, that top 70. It's a lot harder to get in that top 70 than the top 125. So it's a good goal and it's a good place to make it. And I haven't, made the playoffs yet either year on tour. So that's kind of my goal this year to make it to the postseason.
Very cool. Well, I think you're going to get a lot more fans after this interview. I mean, I think people are going to understand how just kind of down to earth and a real dude you are out there. So why don't you hit them up with the socials, how they can get in contact with you or how they can follow you along for the rest of the year, as well as the podcast information.
Yeah. Well, you probably can't follow me on coverage because they don't show me, but you can follow me on the app, which only works half the time. So Andrew Novak Golf on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Instagram. I check the messages, I check the comments. I don't post a whole lot. And then podcast, Screenplay Pod or Screenplay Podcast. We're on everything, Spotify, Apple Pods, whatever you listen to, we're on it. Hit us up, message us, let us know if you like the podcast. Tell us what you want to hear. We're super open to that. And if you're at a tournament, come say what's up. Come tell me you're a fan. Come tell me you heard me on a podcast somewhere. I love hearing that. So
awesome, dude.
Appreciate it.
All right. Well, I greatly appreciate you coming on. Best of luck for the rest of the year. Myself as well as all the listeners will be rooting for you all the way through.
All right. Appreciate it, man.
All right, people. So either get busy golfing or get busy dying.
Absolutely. It depends on the COR of the flagstick, so the coefficient restitution flagstick. In U.S. Opens, I'll take it out, and every other tour event when it's fiberglass, I'll leave it in and bounce that ball against the flagstick if I need to.
Swannies is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days, but if you're looking for the stretchiest and most lightweight pieces that deliver a look that says I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swannies side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and design sourced from our very own weekend warriors, Swannies is looking out for both our planet and those that need a little style to boost their drive another 15 yards. Premium looks from top to bottom at swannies.com.
Hey, podcast patrons. Real quick break in the episode here. I want to talk to you about Big Wings Golf Apparel. They've just become the official glove and proud sponsor of us, Leave the Pin Podcast. We all know how important a comfortable glove and good grip are for the golf swing. And like us, you're probably tired of overpaying for gloves at the pro shop right before your round of golf, or getting some crap glove that's overpriced at Golf Galaxy, or pulling something out of your bag that's stiff as a board because you sweated through it and you left it in there for 2 weeks before you played again. Well, thankfully, Big Wings Golf Apparel has the solution. Go visit bigwingsgolf.com before your next round for all your golf glove and apparel needs. Experience unmatched comfort and a perfect grip with these premium Cabretta leather gloves and feel the difference with every swing. Big Wings Golf Apparel, where craftsmanship meets performance. Again, that's bigwingsgolf.com, and you, our listeners, can use code LTP for 10% off your first order. Now, back to the regularly scheduled podcast.